The scientists of today are creating the next big thing. On the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast, get an early listen to what tomorrow has in store. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, January 4th. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal, filling in for Zoe Thomas. Ukraine's military has managed to rapidly digitize under Russian attack, and at a fraction of the time and cost compared to that of the U.S. Defense Department. On today's show, WSJ Brussels Bureau Chief Dan Michaels will tell us about the shoestring tactics of Ukraine's fighting forces and what, if anything, the Pentagon can learn from them. That's after these headlines. Sam Bankman-Fried has pleaded not guilty to fraud and other criminal charges following the collapse of his cryptocurrency exchange FTX. Prosecutors have accused him of stealing billions of dollars of customer funds from the exchange and of defrauding investors and lenders to his trading firm Alameda Research. Bankman-Fried has previously said he didn't intend to commit fraud, but that he made mistakes while running the company. His trial is set to begin October 2nd. Microsoft is getting its first union in the U.S. Around 300 workers with the company's video game unit, ZeniMax, voted to organize with the Communications Workers of America. Currently, only a handful of U.S.-based unions exist in the video game industry. For the first time in almost a decade, Google and Meta are losing their stronghold on the U.S. advertising market, and industry insiders expect that trend to continue. The two companies' combined share of total U.S. ad dollars hasn't fallen below 50% since 2014. That is, until last year when it dipped to 48.4%, according to research firm Insider Intelligence. Our digital advertising reporter, Patience Hagen, has more.
Google and Meta, they do find themselves in slightly different situations. Meta is losing share of the market. Google is actually still gaining share, albeit a bit more slowly. Meta has been affected by several headwinds. Users are finally starting to move to other social media platforms, especially TikTok. And at the same time, Meta was affected somewhat dramatically by Apple's privacy restrictions. Google's in a different situation. They weren't as strongly affected by Apple's privacy restrictions. However, there are just other options for search advertising now. Players like Amazon and other retailers are finding ways to take advantage of the data they have about what users are searching for.
Google didn't respond to a request for comment, and Meta had no comment. To hear more from Patience, check out this morning's edition of our sister podcast, What's News. NVIDIA and Foxconn are working together on electric vehicles. Under a new partnership, Foxconn says its EVs will use NVIDIA's electronic control units and sensors for highly automated driving. Foxconn is best known for manufacturing Apple products, but it's been taking more steps in the EV industry. It started construction for its first EV battery plant in Taiwan 6 months ago. NVIDIA, meanwhile, recently partnered with Mercedes-Benz for the carmaker's EV production. As we talked about yesterday, CES is here. The mega trade show where companies big and small showcase some of the gadgets they've been working on. And one category of devices we may see more of this year, according to analysts, is assistive technology. Things that can help, say, people with disabilities or the elderly. Our personal tech reporter, Dalvin Brown, was at CES yesterday, and he spoke with Roland Matern, the director of marketing with eSight. The company makes electronic eyewear for the visually impaired, and it's unveiling the next generation of its product, eSight Go, at CES.
Talk to me about some of the technology. Let's dive into what all the Go offers and how it differs from what else is on the market.
Okay. In its simplest terms, the eSight Go uses a camera to pick up the images that the person can no longer perceive. It runs it through a software algorithm, which then allows you to manipulate the image as well with contrast, brightness, magnification, color filters, and it projects it onto two OLED monitors, which then brings the image to the eye. So any photoreceptors that are still functional pick up that image and the brain processes it just like regular vision. And as you use magnification and different manipulations of the image that optimize it for that stimulation of your photoreceptors, the blind spot sort of shrinks away. So many of our users will describe, when I'm looking at your face, I can't see any features, but once I put on the eSight and I optimize the settings, I can count your eyelashes.
Can you talk to me about what's had to happen technologically in order to create eSight Go and for, you know, the devices to get smaller and a bit more discreet?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest breakthrough is exactly what you said, smaller and discreet. So the resolution of the screens that we use had to get to a point where it's optimized. The camera technology nowadays, they're small. The chips are very, very sensitive to light, so you can wear them in low-light conditions without a lot of pixelations. The lens technology, the battery technology, all those things are getting smaller and lighter and more robust. And all those things are allowing us to take the eSight technology to the next level, going fully wireless, getting lighter, getting longer run times, better visual acuity, and easier manipulation of the software through the various menus.
All right, coming up, how Ukrainian forces managed to MacGyver a web of drones, equipment, and more on the cheap and in less than a year. We'll discuss after the break.
I'm Danny Lewis.
And I'm Alex Osola. On the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast, we explore the projects reimagining the world of tomorrow.
Like using sound to rejuvenate coral reefs.
Moving microchips beyond silicon.
Silicon is no longer energy efficient.
And how animals are helping treat human diseases. The future of everything is happening right now.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
The war in Ukraine is approaching month 11. And Kyiv's forces fighting the Russian military have managed to accomplish something the Pentagon hasn't: going digital, networking their fighters, intelligence, and weapons faster and far more cheaply than the decades and billions of dollars spent by the U.S. To be fair, the Defense Department aims for a scale, security, and bandwidth that far exceeds Ukraine's ambitions. But are there lessons the U.S. and the West more broadly can learn from Ukraine's ability to cobble together a virtual command and control system on the fly? With me now to discuss that is WSJ Brussels Bureau Chief Dan Michaels. Dan, thank you for coming on the show.
Good to be with you.
So Dan, you've been keeping tabs on the war in Ukraine and found that the military there has essentially digitized its fighting force on a shoestring. Can you tell us what that actually looks like on the ground? What kind of things are they doing?
For Ukrainian soldiers out in the field, on the front line and behind the front lines, as has been widely reported, they're a pretty scrappy force. There wasn't much of a Ukrainian military in a big way before Russia invaded almost a year ago. A lot of the equipment is donated from countries in the West. But what the Ukrainian troops have that is really unusual is the ability to communicate with each other and to get intelligence and targeting information in real time in a way that other armies, underdog armies, haven't had. They also have new technologies like drones. Drones have been widely used by the US, by Russia, by others. But what the Ukrainians have done is taken drones, which for the US, for example, have been very big and expensive, almost like airplanes, and just taken cheap hobby drones and turned them into tools of war too.
You mentioned that the Ukrainian army is able to communicate with each other in ways that other underdog armies haven't. How are they doing this?
Combination of things. One of the most important things is they're able to communicate using satellites. And that's, for the most part, Starlink, which is Elon Musk, SpaceX's satellite communications operation. They've donated some equipment. The U.S. government has paid for some. A lot of Ukrainian soldiers have bought their own Starlink units. And so they're not reliant on cell phones. They have ability to communicate even when everything around them is destroyed. And over Starlink, they're using some apps that are pretty familiar to people, like Signal, encrypted communications apps. They're also using apps that the Ukrainians themselves have developed for things like targeting and for the headquarters, the bases, command and control centers, to send information for example, targeting information to the troops at the front. Troops using these HIMARS mobile rocket launchers that have gotten a lot of attention, they will get targeting information essentially over a tablet or a cell phone, and that's being fed to them digitally from a headquarters. It might be very far away, but it's incredibly precise.
So Ukraine has a large tech sector. We've covered that on the show before. So from the tech side of things, that all makes sense. But was there anything else in Ukraine that helped them establish this digital guerrilla type warfare so quickly?
It was a combination of capability and just pure need. As several people said to us, when your country is invaded and it's almost existential, what you get is not just military types and not just military technology people, but everybody pitching in, everybody bringing something, which may not be technology itself, but maybe a different way of thinking about a problem. Several people said to me that what's different about the military technology efforts in Ukraine versus what, say, the US or, for example, the UK are doing is that you're really getting just some of the smartest people in society applying their brain power to the problems. And it's just a very different dynamic from, say, in the West, in a peaceful society where those people probably aren't going to be focused on military technology.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit more. How does this compare to other militaries in the West, like the US?
The biggest difference from militaries in the West is the scope and the ambition of what's going on here. What the Ukrainians are doing is emergency, to react very quickly. What the US and some of its allies have been doing has been going on for years. It's incredibly ambitious and much more comprehensive than what the Ukrainians are doing. So what the Ukrainians are doing in some ways has even been enabled by things that the US has done in the past. Let's not forget that the internet was begun as a U.S. military project. GPS was put in space by the Pentagon, and drones were really supercharged by the U.S. military. So what the Ukrainians are doing is cherry-picking the cheapest, easiest to get, off-the-shelf bits of this and improvising an approximation of what the U.S. is doing, but by no means trying to copy the whole thing. The Pentagon is under enormous pressure to make sure that everything is foolproof and works perfectly. The Ukrainians are doing this all by the seat of their pants, on the fly, just trying to gain a little bit of an edge on the Russians. And given the horrific situation for the Ukrainians, there's a lot more willingness to experiment. And I've got to imagine that if things don't go perfectly, people are a little bit more forgiving than they might be if some hugely expensive Pentagon system doesn't work as it's expected to.
So are there any lessons that the West or the U.S. can learn from Ukraine's tactics?
The most significant lesson repeated to us by several people was the need and the willingness to experiment and innovate. A few people we talked to who have experience on both sides with the U.S., the U.K., but also with the Ukrainians say what's really impressive about what the Ukrainians are doing is just their willingness to try things. So the biggest gift for the West in terms of thinking about military technology that is coming from the really terrible fighting in Ukraine is this laboratory that is really being powered by the need to move fast.
All right, WSJ, Brussels Bureau Chief Dan Michaels, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
And that's it for today's Tech News Briefing. If you want more tech stories, check out our website, wsj.com. And if you like our show, please leave us a 5-star rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help. I'm Julie Chang for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.